Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf Show. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and right alongside here, of course, every week is my co-host, Legends Tour player, and LPGA professional, Cindy Miller. Cindy, good morning.
Good morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and you're actually on your way somewhere this morning. Where are you going this morning?
I'm on my way to work, and we are doing junior camp. So we've got a bunch of kids. We're going to help them improve their game.
Always growing the game, Cindy. Thank you for doing such a fantastic job, and nice to see some fresh youngsters, as it were, getting in and game of golf. And I can't think of a better person for them to be aligned with and to get that first start. Let me just remind everyone, Cindy, before we continue on, that we are live every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here on blogtalkradio.com. Best way to find us, of course, is to go to blogtalkradio.com. Up in the search key, type Women of Golf, and that will bring you to the main page. And, of course, during the live broadcast, right at the top of that page is the current and most up-to-date live broadcast. But for some reason, if you're not able to join us live, just go to that link a little bit later on. In fact, at the end of the show, or whenever it's convenient, and again, you just go to blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf. And that will bring you to that same page. But the show, including the current show, will be down in the on-demand section or archive section, and you can listen to them at your leisure if you're not able to tune in live. But for those of you who are, welcome and good morning. Also, if you want to speak to Cindy or I or any of the guests during the live broadcast from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern, you can do so by calling area code 347-945-5855. That's 347-945-5855, or you can email any questions or comments to the show at womenofgolf@gmail.com. Also, if you're interested in being a guest on the show, maybe you're either a player or a coach or a teaching professional, or maybe somebody that's got some interesting spin, if you will, no pun intended, that you like to share with us, you can reach out to Cindy Miller at her email. And that is cindy@cindymillergolf.com. And also, if you're interested in connecting with Cindy and all the great things that she does, you can also reach out to her there at cindy@cindymillergolf.com. And make sure you visit her website as well and check out, as I said, many of the great things that she's doing at cindymillergolf.com. You can also reach out to me personally as well at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. Got a great show this morning, Cindy. We've got first coming up here in just a few minutes. Hopefully, if she got my number correction okay, Brianna Elliott, she's the winner of this past weekend Symetra Tours, and I hope I'm saying this correctly, the Fusilo Kia Championship at Capitol Hills in Albany, New York, and I believe this is her first win, and she's from actually down under. She's Australian, and of course, spends a lot of her time up here in the U.S. and all around the globe playing some great golf. But she's a winner this past weekend, so we're going to congratulate her and let her come on and talk a little bit about her win and just some other great things. And got a little interesting twist to this young lady, which I won't spoil it, but we'll talk about it when she comes live on air. And then a little bit later on, John Stabler will be joining us. He's the co-founder and co-owner of Sports Psych Inc., which also referred to now as Golf Psych. And he's also the co-author with Dr. Deborah Graham, which I believe is his wife, The 8 Traits of Champion Golfers. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. And he's also the inventor of the Mind Meter for Golf, a biofeedback for more effective coaching on the course. So got some great guests this morning, Cindy. Looking forward to having both of them on here. But speaking of Australian, I was mentioning to you off the air that I watched this weekend, and I believe it was ESPN that had it on one of their sports channels, an interview with Greg Norman. It was actually quite interesting. And you had said something, too, that you had heard somewhere that he wasn't really, initially interested in golf. Do you remember where you heard that offhand?
I saw a post either on Facebook or Twitter last night or this morning, something about he really didn't love playing golf, that he put too much of his life into it. I'm probably reading the wrong thing into it, but I was shocked when I read it, because typically if you are that good at golf, you love the game and you love the pressure and the pursuit and everything that goes with it. And the post really sounded like he didn't, and I was pretty surprised.
Well, you know, what I remember from the interview, and as I said, my mind is getting a little foggy as I get older, so forgive me, but I remember him saying something to the effect that initially golf was not really his first love. It was not something that he, as many of the great players and many that get into golf, that start at a very early age, you know, dad or mom or somebody takes them out to the golf course for the first time, and they kind of get bitten by that bug. And as I was starting to say before we went live, I seem to recall something to the effect that I think he either grew up or lived very close to an Air Force base, and he had an interest in flying these jets, and that was something that he was interested in sort of pursuing at some point. Obviously never did. I think he did fly, got to fly one at some point later on as he became Greg Norman, the golfer. But I don't think he actually flew one as an officer or anything like that. But yeah, I seem to recall something along that. But I never really actually remember hearing anything saying that he didn't really, love or like golf. I just think that was not really necessarily his first love.
Got it. I could be totally wrong. Or they may have, you know, stretched the truth a little bit.
Well, and you know, you always, at least I do, unless I know the specific individuals posting, whether it be, you know, Facebook, Twitter, or any of the other social media, I always take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, because a lot of times they'll hear or read something, and, you know, everybody has a different interpretation sometimes, sometimes more often than not. But we certainly are glad that he did continue on with his career. Was offered, particularly in the 80s and even early 90s, offered some very exciting golf. And of course, the commentator that interviewed him, of course, talked about some of the mishaps that he had along the way, where he literally had the tournament snatched out, the Masters, of course, and had that happen, I think, twice, once by Nick Faldo, and I'm trying to remember, I don't
Larry
think this
Mize.
Was the Masters. Larry Mize, thank you. And then there was also
and it
one,
was
too.
The Masters.
Yes, that's right. Both times there. But there was also another tournament, and I don't recall which one, but David Frost they showed in some of the highlight reels. He also snatched a potential victory, and I don't know if it was a major or not. I don't think it was, but anyways, he went on and certainly was a very prominent player, but more notably, he has been a very successful businessman, has always done very well. In fact, has been considered to be one of the top businessmen in the golf industry, right alongside with, of course, Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and a few of the others, but has always been had quite a prowess, if you will, in his business skills. So But it was just a very interesting. So if you didn't get a chance to see it, I strongly urge to go back into the ESPN archives. I'm sure that they'll have some snippets there, if not some of the video on, I think they said, on YouTube. So just very interesting if you've never had a chance to watch his interview. But, you know, lots of – here we are, Cindy, kind of for some anyways in the golf industry – being the end of coming up to the end of July, sort of mid-season for some of the professionals and some of the players up, especially in the Northeast. What are some of the things that you try to do? And this was a question I posed the other night on Golf Talk Live. And since we've got a minute or two here before Brianna comes on, obviously we're coming sort of mid-season for those that have a shorter golf season up north. And you've had a chance to work with some players that and some individuals that maybe have had you know, a few rounds under their belt, but maybe still struggling. What do you try to do to prevent them from sort of giving up midway through the season and just saying, I'm just going to stick with what I've got? Or do you try to do things to energize and keep them going to finish out the season?
Well, that's an interesting question, because typically I don't seek people to come to me. So when they come,
right,
they usually have a pain. But with some of the kids I teach, I've got a couple girls coming in today for a couple-hour session of working on their game. And what I find is they need to be motivated to want to get better. And these two young ladies are fired up to really improve. And one of them is motivated by wanting to beat a couple other people and wanting to win the tour championship of the Western New York PGA. And she has to win the last three tournaments to win player of the year. And she shot 84, it's her lowest round for 18 holes ever. Mm. And she shot that yesterday and won by one.
Wow.
And so, so I'm working with her with John Stabler and Deborah Graham. She just completed her mental golf profile and the golf psych thing, and she's very suspicious and apprehensive and afraid, and she's got a dad who is a controlling, dominant father, and I keep telling him I'm going to duct tape his mouth if he doesn't stop. So he will... He texted me yesterday and gave me her whole round on golf shot or shot sink or whatever it's called, and said, you know, oh my God, she hit so many fairways and so many greens, but her putting is still tentative and she's still playing scared. And I said, she won by one. Be quiet.
Yeah.
You know, you're making her more afraid. So,
you
know, it depends. And I've got a lot of dads. I almost feel like the dad is the student. The kid is the puppet.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but for grown-ups and adults, they come when they're missing it bad enough to be in pain enough to schedule a lesson. And it's funny because I'm booked nonstop solid all week from 10 until 8 p.m. So I've got people texting me, "Did anybody cancel? Did anybody cancel?" And
right.
And you know, no, they didn't. And you should book it now for next week, you know, if there's one or two openings. So it's funny how people's minds work. You know, it's really odd that they wait till the last minute and then freak out.
Yeah, you know, and just an interesting note, a couple of points. You know, one referring to parents. We talked about this, I think, a few weeks ago, you know, about getting a little too over involved sometimes. Certainly need to be there to be supportive, you know, with their youngsters and encouraging, but they also need to know when to back off. And you're right, you know, when this young lady wins by a stroke, I think sometimes what happens is I think parents get caught up in the frenzy, if you will. They see some of these hot young players that come up and they might win by five or six strokes. And that's not, you know, that's not common, as common as what people think. And a lot of times what ends up happening is they end up putting too much pressure. I mean, he should be happy and celebrating the fact that his daughter won whether it's by one or two or 10 strokes, and just let her enjoy and soak up that victory and gain some momentum and encouragement from it.
And that's exactly why I said, why don't you dump her off with me for half the day tomorrow? Because we need
right.
to get her away from you.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I see that Brianna is on board. So let me lost the call here. We'll wait for her to come back in. But anyways, let me just finish the other thought then while we're waiting for her to call back in. One of the other things too is, and we talked about this on Thursday night on Golf Talk Live. You know, one of the things that a lot of people have is they assume that, well, just because the weather kind of gets nasty and, I only have maybe normally 5-6 months of the year to play golf, that I just sort of give up for the winter months. But that's not true. There's a lot of other things that you could do. There's a lot of most people, especially during the major centers like where you are in that, there's indoor facilities they can go to. But if they don't, there's a lot of things that Cindy, they can do in their own home just to keep those golf muscles working and things that they can practice, not just putting, but even with the full swing, there's different tips that they can be doing, working on to keep themselves focused on their golf game throughout the cold months as well in preparation for next season.
Absolutely. And right now we would be in season. Then we have postseason, then we have off-season, then we have preseason. So in the season, you really don't want to work on a lot of things.
Right.
And the postseason, you might want to rest. And the off-season is when you really want to work on your game.
Yeah.
So right now is a data gathering opportunity for how many fairways do you hit, how many greens do you hit, how many putts do you make, what's realistic. You know, if you just want to break 100, try to get on the green and par and two putt, which makes you a double bogey. And then every once in a while you're going to make a bogey, and then you're going to shoot 99. And then if you want to break 90, you want to be on the green in one over regulation. And if you two putt every one, you just shot 90, so you got to make a par somewhere. Find realistic goals, but you really have to be able to measure it all.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I love about Golf Psych, because John and Deborah have created a program where you can measure your mental golf skills, but you also measure your personality to be able to be a champion golfer. And,
right.
and you can work towards becoming better at those character traits, if you will.
Let me pause you right there, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I see Brianna is back on board, so we need to get her on here because we're running a little bit behind. I'd like to welcome Brianna Elliott. She's the winner of this past weekend Symetra Tour Fusillo Kia Champion Capitol Hills in Albany, New York. So let's bring her on, and we'll talk a little bit about this past weekend's champion. Good morning, Brianna. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Not too bad, and I hope, Brett got you the correct number sometime either last night or this morning. But that's my fault, by the way, so you can blame me. But congratulations on your win.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really happy, with the win. And, it's a huge win for me this week, so I'm so happy at the minute. It's great.
That's awesome. Let me ask you, did you drive the car away?
I will be, that's for sure. It's on hold for me at the club, so I can't wait to get my hands on the keys and get behind the wheel. It's such a cool prize, and Billy is so generous to be able to give that away to the winner. So yeah, I'm stoked that it was me this year.
Well, and,
awesome.
And let me just add to that. When I was getting things ready for the show, one of the things I noticed in an article that Brett had sent, you had made a statement or a comment to the effect that you've, of course, been driving a lot of rental cars here for the better part, and now you're going to get a chance to win and get a chance to drive away in your own vehicle. So congratulations on that. That's obviously very exciting. And as I was mentioning, just to be able to have some hot little wheels there, and just in case for those of you that didn't get a chance to watch the tournament, of course the sponsor was Kia, great automobile line, and it was a Kia Optima, I believe, that you won, correct?
Yeah, yeah, it's a beautiful car. I mean, to win a car, like, I'm really happy, but then for it to turn up and to be an Optima, a Kia Optima, is really cool. And as you said, I've been renting cars all year, and it's nice to be able to say that I've got my own now. I think, yeah, it's going to make a big difference sort of going forward. So, yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, and just to let everybody know, as I mentioned, you're from Australia. Let me just make sure I get this correct. Is it Yarrawonga?
Yep, Yarrawonga. Yep, that's where I'm from.
Wow, very. Now, is that a kind of a small little area, or is it near? Where is it in relation? Obviously, most people know of Sydney, Australia. Whereabouts
right,
is?
Okay.
Where's Yarrawonga?
Yarrawonga is in Victoria, so it's about a four-hour drive north of Melbourne. The biggest city is Melbourne, and it's a beautiful little country town, about 12,000 in population, so it's quite small, and it's on a big lake. So it's a beautiful area. It's really pretty, and that's where my parents are from, and that's where my whole family lives. So. It's a beautiful part of the world, actually. It would be nice to be able to go back.
So is this, can I gather then there's going to be some serious celebrating going on back in Yarrawonga for this win?
Yes, definitely. I think it started yesterday, and I got a few pictures from my family with a few drinks and some champagne.
Uh-huh.
So, that's
very
cool.
Good.
I'm really close with my family, and it's great to be able to celebrate the win with them, and I'm actually going home in about a week, so, I mean, it's perfect timing, and, I'm sure we'll celebrate together.
Well, that'll be fantastic. Let me just ask you a quick question. I mentioned that there was something a little bit different about you coming on the show this morning. And it was very interesting, and I want you to expand on it. Of course, you dyed your hair before the U.S. Women's opened, and this past weekend it obviously seemed to pop off. Of course, you won the tournament. You dyed your hair green. Why green? What was the significance?
That's a good question. I've been asked that a lot. So I had a week off before the U.S. Open. I wanted to do some preparation, and that included getting my hair colored, and it was just something that I really wanted to do. Green isn't particularly my favorite color, but it was the color that I thought I'd always wanted. And yeah, I mean, I got it done, and at the time had no idea that it was going to be such a big hit. So it's really cool. It's become a good omen. So I don't know if I can go back to plain old brown anymore. I think it might be there to stay.
Wow. Well, I know when I got some of the information coming over, and it said sort of said in the headline that green-haired girl won the tournament, I thought for a minute green hair, and then of course when I saw the picture, I realized. But anyways, So again, congratulations on the win. Tell us, share a little bit about the win. Obviously, it was. It was getting down to the wire. You faced off a little bit with Augusta James from Bath, Ontario. Tell us a little bit about the tournament and about the final round.
Yeah, I mean, I've stayed with Augusta before in housing, so we're actually good friends, and she's a lovely girl, really nice, and plays some great golf. So yesterday, I mean, it was really nice to be in the same group as her, to play alongside each other. And, it did. The lead kept going back and forth, and most of the day I was one up. And on, I think it was 14, I pulled my second shot well left of the green, and I ended up bogeying it. And on the exact same hole, Augusta birdied. So there was a big, a two-shot swing right there. And at that point, I was really kicking myself, That's a big change in momentum. And I was fortunate on the next hole, on 15, to make a really steady par. And, Augusta missed a putt to save her par. So I guess, the swing came straight back to me, and the momentum changed again. So on the par three, I hit my shot in nice and close and was able to sink a really good birdie putt. And I think, I guess at that point, I wasn't thinking too much about this putt could be the putt that wins the tournament for me. And I was able to stay nice and calm out there. And, yeah, that the putt that I sunk on 16 sort of shot me back into the lead, and I was able to hold off the last two holes with just steady pars. So it was a nice last round. Like, it was sort of, I guess it's always good when the lead can go back and forth between the players. Keeps it exciting for the crowd. They were right into it. So I guess, yeah, I mean, for me, to hold my nerve was the main thing that I'm going to take away from this win, is that I was able to stay calm in the moment. And, you always dream about pulling off these victories, that to do it and feel really good about it. It's amazing. It's a great feeling.
Well, obviously, it became a little bit of a nail biter there for a while, as they say, but you said, you managed to pull it through. Let me ask you, and this was sort of part of the question I wanted to ask you, because you did kind of go back and forth with Augusta. When you feel pressure, obviously in a tournament you're always under pressure throughout the whole tournament, but particularly in a scenario like this where you're getting down to the wire and you're kind of battling it out with one or maybe even sometimes multiple players. What part of your game holds the best under pressure, and what areas do you know you need to keep doing a little extra work on? What's your strong part of your game, and what's your weak area of your game, do you think?
I guess for me, on Sunday, my mental strength really surprised me. I guess, you're always thinking that moment, you wonder, how you're going to feel, if you're going to feel so nervous that you're gripping the club too tight and you can't make a swing, or, it's always interesting to see how your body reacts when you're under pressure like that. And to me, that was like a huge moment, to feel that I was actually nice and calm, relaxed. And for me, I've been really strong off the tee all week, nice and long. So to keep that going after that bogey on 14, I was able to hit a nice long drive down the next hole when it could have probably fallen to pieces on that tee box. Like, to know that I'd just bogeyed and Augusta had birdied, and I wasn't feeling great at that point. So for me, moving forward is just the confidence in knowing that under the pressure I was able to stay calm and still play the last few holes really well. And something that I've got to work on would be, still my putting. I feel like I'm gaining momentum with my putting, and I'm gaining confidence. But, definitely this week was one on the green, and I was able to say that I putted really well. But moving forward, I know that's something I've got to work on still.
Right.
Let me ask you a question, Brianna. Did you go to college? Did you go in the U.S.?
I didn't. I finished my high school in Australia, and I actually spent 2 years after high school traveling as an amateur and playing all my golf overseas. So I played in Asia, in the U.K., in Europe, and I really got a lot of experience from traveling around and playing all different countries, all different courses. So. After 2 years of doing that, playing for Australia, I decided to turn professional, and the US was the only place I wanted to go, so I turned pro over here.
That's awesome, and I didn't have the chance to look, but are you within the top 10 of the money list?
This win gets me up to 23rd on the money list, so
That's awesome.
A big move for me. And, I'm really looking forward to a good couple of weeks coming up, and hopefully I can, keep the momentum going and play some good golf this week in Milwaukee.
Now,
that's
was
awesome.
This,
so how many weeks left are there?
I want to say probably 6 or 7. I know that we've got Milwaukee this week, and then I'm actually going home for a month. And we have one tournament in Boston in August. So but I'm skipping it. And then I think we might have 5 or 6 tournaments after that.
Very good. You've got plenty of time.
Yeah. Got plenty of chances, and I feel like, my game is really progressing well. So I feel like this last half of the season could be quite strong for me.
And how long have you been on the Symetra Tour?
This is my 2nd full season. My first year I actually played part-time on the LPGA and part-time on the Symetra. So I guess my experience playing in LPGA events, probably helped me out this week too.
Fantastic. Now, this was your first professional career win, or no?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's what I thought. Just a sort of a final wrap-up question. One of the things I'm most curious about, especially when we've got some younger players coming on here, obviously you've played golf for quite a while as a youngster, I'm sure. Who did you admire growing up? Who did you sort of look towards as you were coming up in the golf ranks? Who were some of your favorite players that you enjoyed and really gave you inspiration in your tournament play?
Yeah, well, growing up in Australia, we're actually quite lucky in the fact that Kari Webb has a lot to do with the women's amateur golf. So mm-hmm. growing up, Kari Webb was always my idol and still is. And she actually has a golf scholarship back home in Australia. So she's doing amazing things for women's golf in Australia. And that was where I got my start. I got my start winning tournaments back home in Australia. And if you had won enough and finished in the top 1 or 2 in the rankings, you got the chance to come to the U.S. and stay with Kari while she played the U.S. Open, which was amazing as like a 17, 16-year-old golfer.
Wow.
So I did that 2 years in a row. And for me, that just gave me so much motivation to want to get out here and play with, the big guns. And,
yep.
That's all thanks to Kari. She definitely had a big impact on my career. And, still to this day, I played with her the other week at the U.S. Open. She's like, class act, great person.
Yeah, she's still got lots of game in her, too, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I've watching her over the years as well. She was one of my favorites, and that's great that she was such a powerful influence. Well, Brianna, we know that you've got lots of things coming up here in the weeks to come, a trip back home to visit with your family and join in the celebration. And I'm sure that they're getting excited and looking forward to you coming home and doing that. And congratulations again on your win. What a phenomenal thing what a gift to take home to the family is a win. And I know you've got to leave the car behind, but you'll be able to get that, enjoy that when you come back. So thank you very much for joining Cindy Miller and I this morning on the Women of Golf. And we look forward to having you come back on again on the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk to you both. I really appreciate your well wishes. And thanks for a great week.
Okay.
Good luck, my dear.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Great young lady, and I'm sure she's going to do well.
Absolutely.
All right, well, as I see, we move along here. I see that John is on board. So let me just do a quick introduction, and we'll get John on here because I know we're getting a little bit pressed for time. John Stabler, of course, is the co-founder and co-owner of Sports Psych, Inc., which, of course, does business as Golf Psych since 1990. He's a co-author with Dr. Deborah Graham, his wife, The 8 Traits of Champion Golfers. He's also the inventor of Mind Meter for Golf, Biofeedback for More Effective Coaching on the Course. And Golf Psych is the only mental game training system in golf based on tour-level research, studies from the LPGA, PGA Tours, and, of course, the Champions Tour players. Together, John and Deborah have worked with over 380 tour players over 30 years now. 21 clients have won 31 majors, and they are conducting monthly mental game training schools near San Antonio. And, of course, he's retired from traveling on tour. So without any further hesitation, Cindy, let's welcome John Stabler.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cindy.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you all this morning? Sounds like a lot of energy.
Yeah, we're doing well. John, welcome to the program. This is Ted. And Cindy, I'll let you start off the conversation.
I got to ask, you've been on with us before, and we're grateful for that, but I need a little help, if you will. And again, the talking points here, you know, the golf industry is pushing a failed paradigm for instruction and making it harder for players to perform in competition. Can you help us simplify what it really takes to play good golf once you know how to hit the golf ball?
Wow, that is a a great question, quite a leading question. I could write a book on that. Let's keep it simple. Players need to have mental goals for the competitive rounds. That is, things that they're trying to accomplish mentally, emphasizing the process of playing rather than the outcomes. Outcomes meaning the outcome of any shot or the score. So many players are very focused on the score and the situation. They're constantly comparing where they are to where they think other players are, what score they need to shoot, how they just gave up shots, they need to make up shots. They're constantly strategizing. And all of this mental effort is wasting lots of energy, and typically it's hurting their ability to play. It's getting them to be more aggressive than they really should be. It's getting them to play shots that they're not fully committed to. And typically, it becomes very frustrating. So we emphasize the process, that is, all the things that you can control, including, or most importantly, yourself, your level of arousal, and what you're focusing on. And generally speaking, when we help players understand these things and themselves, their personality for golf and their the thoughts that get them in trouble, typically it simplifies their thinking, quiets their mind, and brings out their athletic abilities so that they can really perform to their ability. Most players today play great in practice, hit it great on the range,
yeah,
but simply don't play as well on the course when it matters. And so there's just huge opportunity for improvement and huge opportunity for us to help them change the way they're practicing, change the way they're approaching the rounds and preparing for the rounds, and change the way they're operating while they're competing. We can go into all areas, you know. And it's not just the thinking. It's also hydration and nutrition and fitness and getting mental breaks between shots. It's just so many things that contribute to the player's ability to actually perform. So,
John,
go ahead, Ted.
I just wanted to add a thought and get your opinion on this, because you mentioned something that was very interesting about a lot of players coming into their round and, you know, sort of try to strategize, as they go along and obviously bombard themselves with a lot of, mental thoughts and processes that go along. It's part of the problem that players aren't really coming into, and I'm not talking about tour players, it's a different kettle of fish, but some of your amateur players that maybe don't really come in with should they be coming in with a strategy ahead of time and sticking with that? And obviously you have to adapt as in some cases, but the part of the problem is that the reason why they're not bringing their range game, if you will, to the golf course is when they get on the course, they're sort of all over the place. And I don't mean necessarily with shots, but just their mental focus, if you will, is just all over the place instead of coming in with a clear objective and strategy for the round.
Ted, you're very insightful. That's right on the money. Too many players, even the professionals, some of them, before the round, they have not prepared effectively. They don't have a true game plan that matches their strengths for golf, has them playing that course the best way for their strengths. And so they they go into competition, and immediately, because they want to do well and they're concerned, and what we call their level of arousal goes up. And one of the things that happens when your level of arousal goes up is your mind gets busier, and you don't think as well. You don't make as good decisions as you would if you were a little lower on the arousal scale or more relaxed. Okay? So if you're making it up as you go with this busier mind that's not as good at making decisions, and then you get outcomes that trigger emotions, which dump chemicals into your system, which make it, well, it reduces your physical abilities, truly reduces them. You can see how this is, it's just fated to not work. It can't work. So if they have a good plan, what we call a good game plan, they know what clubs, targets, how they want to play each hole. They know the wind direction before they get on the course. I mean, we have great weather forecasts in that regard the night before. So you could literally lay out how you want to play the course, best way for you. And then you need to commit to that game plan. If you get into the round and you get behind it on score, well, it means that for some reason you're not performing, you're not executing or able to execute your game plan. To get more aggressive, given that situation, doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
That's what most players do. They immediately go more aggressive, trying to make up shots. And this, first of all, there's a reason why they're behind, why things aren't working the way they should be. And that's generally arousal and being able to lower that and get their athletic cells back in the game is more important than trying to pick up shots right now. Mm. So having the game plan, and the only purpose of a practice round is to develop that game plan. Not, you shouldn't be keeping score when you play a practice round. You shouldn't even hit all the shots. Just focus on best way for me to play this course. What's my favorite approach shot and yardage, favorite approach club? You should try to play for that as much as possible. And then
the night before,
once you've got that game plan, you can do what we call programming. You can play it in your imagination. And by doing that, it's like practicing the game plan. The next morning before the round, on the range, you should not be working on your swing. You should be working on getting into play mode. That is, doing full routines and playing golf shots, maybe the golf shots from your game plan on the range, not trying to perfect your swing. That's a huge mental error. And then when you get on the course, you're focused on, okay, my game plan said driver down the left side towards that tall tree with a little fade. That's my game plan. Okay, now all I care about is doing a really good routine, getting really settled, and swinging freely.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's it. And then, okay, so did it go there or not? All right, I like it, I don't like it. And then take your mind off the course, relax, conserve energy, and when you get to the ball, what's the next shot? Is it your game plan shot, or is the ball not quite where you intended? But that doesn't mean your game plan's bad or your game plan's worthless. It simply means you didn't execute perfectly, but you still know where you want to be on that green, what side you need to be on, because you thought about it when you were more relaxed. And so committing to that game plan is super important, Ted. You're exactly right.
Yeah, so obviously what you want to do too, John, is, as you said, you may not have executed the shot exactly the way you wanted it, so you may have to slightly alter in preparation for next shot, but you still want to stay on that game plan. It brings me to an interesting question, what you were talking about. As you were talking, I'm sort of was thinking here, what happens, how do you handle a situation, or how do you help a player who comes to you with this problem? And just set it up for you, and then I'll let you respond. They've got a game plan in mind. They're executing their game plan, and they've played two or three holes, and pretty much, within reason, everything is called that game plan. All of a sudden, all the wheels sort of come off the cart. They've hit three really bad shots, maybe even had a couple of bad holes. It's now derailed. how do they refocus to get back with their game plan? What do you advise them, or what would you say to them in order to get back to that game plan? And we've seen this happen many, many times, even at the professional level, where a player will be doing phenomenal for a tournament or even a round, and then all of a sudden, you know, all heck breaks loose. How do you advise, or how do you encourage a player to get refocused?
Okay. Another great question. We had a really, really good example of that and recovering. Jordan Spieth at the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
If you recall, on the 16th hole, he made a long putt. And I believe, without knowing Jordan or talking to him, I believe that that surprised him and excited him and, in essence, pushed him up the arousal scale. He'd been playing well within himself. He'd been very, very focused up to that point. He made a fantastic putt, and he actually made it. Now had a two-shot lead. And that next tee shot, you could definitely describe that as the wheels came off. He missed the green. He missed the shot. And the commentator said the worst miss he had all week on that next hole.
Right.
So the wheels just came off, and Jordan did not play that hole well, ended up scoring poorly, but had enough time to be recovered so that he actually played 18 really well.
Well, where's golf?
Was able to win the tournament. Okay.
Right, exactly.
That's an example at the highest level with one of the best players in the world. The wheels can come off, and it typically happens because the player's level of awareness wasn't high enough. They were surprised. They experienced their emotions for some reason, all of which pushed them up the arousal scale, released chemicals into the system, and truly reduced their physical ability. All right. So recovery, first of all, takes time. You have to stop the thoughts that are creating the problem. Thoughts about, oh, my God, what are they going to think about that shot? Oh, my God, I just blew the tournament in one shot. What's everybody going to say? You know, those kinds of thoughts, beating yourself up. Well, those just keep the chemicals going. You've got to stop those thoughts right there. And our clients, we give them a bunch of thought control methods that we work to raise their awareness and then have methods for stopping the thoughts. That has to happen. Okay. If you have reacted, if you have just hit a terrible shot and you've reacted, you know you have. You got angry, you got upset, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You better get conservative. Your next shot, you better play more conservative than you might have or even than your game plan was. Okay? But what we coach our players to do is to say, okay, so what was it about that previous shot? Not my swing. What was it that I did poorly mentally? Was it my visualization? Was it my feel step? Was it my commitment? Was it my tempo? What was it? And if I can identify that, then that's my focus for the very next shot. Meanwhile, breathing and calming, perhaps walking a little slower, moving a little slower, giving yourself more time so that you can recover from that reaction, from that miss. And then move right back into your game plan and continue to do that. What happens when the wheels, you know, lots of players experience this, and they experience multiple shots and multiple holes where they just can't play. And that's, we call that a meltdown.
Right.
They're not able to manage those thoughts. The subsequent shots add to the problem because they're not working either. And now we've got a player that's panicking, a player with arousal, they just don't know what to do. Quite often, they start trying to fix their swing because it's got to be the swing, and it's not. But in trying to fix the swing, they become left-brained, they become less athletic, and their attention is now on the swing, which, in truth, they cannot control. You cannot control your swing while you're swinging. If you try, you will mess it up.
Yeah.
So they've got to come back to the mental side. They've got to work on things they can't control, A, themselves and what they're thinking, work on breathing and lowering their arousal and lower their expectations a little bit, too, when that has happened.
Yep.
And give them a little time, and as their physical abilities come back, they'll be able to play again.
Right. Cindy, let me ask you something. John was talking about a little earlier about, you know, when a player has hit their shot and then on their way to the next shot. Do you recall in one of our earlier programs when you were doing the Own Your Game series, you mentioned, I believe you had mentioned it, or it might have been somebody that we had on, talking about Annika Sorenstam. That was one thing that she was dealing with and trying to calm her mind, if you will, in between shots. Do you remember that conversation, Cindy?
Yeah, I remember her trying to win the U.S. Open, and Lynn and Pia told her to go on vacation and figure out what she was going to do with her kitchen at her new house. She was redoing the kitchen. And it's just, they were trying to help her take the mental break and not focus so much on the task at hand. And it truly, I mean, I've been to John's training sessions, and clearly I need it. I'm the poster child of the mind meter. And I'm so glad I had you on the show. I'm getting a lesson for free here. But, you know, you can't try. And you know what's funny, John, is I really saw that happen to Jordan Spieth. And that was total arousal. It's almost like the Masters when Tiger made that chip shot and then hit it OB on the next hole. Yeah. Nobody remembers the fact that he hit it OB. So it's such a mind game, and you have to know what you're doing. And the process in setting up a game plan, thank you for reminding me, John.
You're very welcome. Cindy, I have to correct that little comment there. Tiger made the chip on 16, and then he missed the hole on 17. It ended up over on the 15th hole, but it didn't go out of bounds.
Okay,
right.
Well, you told me you hit it way off.
Way
off. Best player in the world at the time, and he just missed the entire hole.
You know, the interesting thing, that raises an interesting point, John. You know, when Tiger was you know, sort of in the zone, if you will, for lack of words, one of the things that he was always very, very good at doing is, obviously we all hit bad shots. Tiger was not immune to that. And I can remember very early on in his career, one of the things that really awestruck a lot of the audience and those that were even on the course was his ability to be able to recover very effectively from those shots. I remember, and I think it was at the Buick, where he was off to the right, in not quite in another fairway, and he ended up basically slinging, I think it was a 6-iron around, and parked it within just a few feet of the hole, and people were just amazed at this ability. You know, he was going around trees and over this and under that, you know, sort of speak, and I'm obviously just speaking figuratively here, but he, you know, he had that ability. For some reason here lately, he seems to have lost that ability. Any thoughts on that?
Sure. I have to say, first of all, I haven't worked with Tiger. We have not.
No, I don't.
So we're speculating here a little bit.
Sure.
But when Tiger's faced with a trouble shot, like you described, you know, swinging a big 6-iron and ending up a few inches from the hole, that was not a typical normal shot. That was what we call a trouble shot. And most players, if they think about it, will recognize that quite often they play trouble shots well. And what happens with a trouble shot is that where in other shots out in the middle of the fairway, you don't have any obstacles to go around or over or under. When you got a trouble shot, now you have to think about where the ball is going and how you make it go there, okay? So you're not thinking about your swing, and nobody knows how it's going to come off. It's a trouble shot, you know, so you can't be perfect. So those things take a lot of pressure off, and they actually make us more right playing and more athletic. So it's quite common for players to play the trouble shots really well. And in fact, I use that quite often to help them understand what a good mental routine is. You know, when your attention is on how the ball is going to travel and how it's going to move and the spin you're going to put on it and how high and all that, thoughts are in the right place. When your thoughts are on your swing, how many swing instructors has Tiger now had? How many times has he redone his swing?
Yeah.
Where do his thoughts have to be? You know, when he's out in the course and he's on the tee box or he's out in the fairway and he's had this, you know, concerns about his swing and he's changing his swing, and well, it makes him more left brain, and just that, becoming more left brain, thinking about his swing, will make him less athletic.
Right.
Many
right.
observers have said, you know, Tiger still hits it really good on the range. You watched him hitting it and working the ball and hitting all these different shots on the range. No problem.
Yet, yeah.
Right now, he can't play on the course, especially when it's important.
Yeah.
Well,
he's
pretty clear that mentally he's gotten lost. Back in the day, you know, he'd focus on his shots. He's focused on working the ball. He'd focus on creating shots. And he played fantastic. He was well known for wonderful short game, you know,
yep.
his imagination and his touch. Well, that's all athletic. And his pursuit of perfection or pursuit of this wonderful swing thing, you know, that is a Tiger trap that most golfers fall into. And unfortunately,
yep.
the golf industry supports that.
Yeah, I agree, and I've said much the same myself. I think that really this has become a mental issue. John, I see that unfortunately we're running out of time here. I want to give you a quick opportunity just to let the listeners know, first off, where they can go to get more information, not just the average golfers out there, but obviously those that are tuning in that may be in the profession that would like to come and work with you. Where can they go and how can they get more information on how to participate with Psych?
Great. Thank you, Ted. Our website is golfpsych, that's PSYCH.com, all one word, golfpsych.com. We're located near San Antonio, Texas, and we have schools every month. They're small group schools. We limit to 4 players, so you get lots of attention. And in a very short time, we can move you from an average golfer to a golfer that understands the mental game and has already made progress, and over time, because of our system, will get better and better and better mentally. So their scores will trend down, their physical game will improve faster, and will help them figure out those conundrums, those things that just don't make sense. You know, why do I play so good in practice yet struggle on the course? So, again,
yep.
golfpsych.com, and all the information is there. You can reach us through that. You can email us. You can call us through that. It's all there.
Perfect. John, on behalf of Cindy and I, we want to thank you very much for joining us. And Cindy, I would propose that we arrange to have John come back for a longer period of time. In fact, I would love to set up and have you, John, come back on for the full program. I think this is an area that really needs to be explored in a little more detail. And in a short segment like this, I know it's very difficult to get into a lot of topics, a lot of the areas that we'd like to. So I would like to extend the invitation. So, Cindy, if you want to communicate with John at some point, and let's have him come back on here in the future and a little bit longer segment, we can get into some more topics and discussion.
I would love that, yeah. John, thank you so much.
Yeah, I'd be very happy.
I'll be out for the LPGA Regional Summit in October, and I may have a couple of students that will be playing in the Pro-Am with me, so if we could set something up to do another school level 2 or whatever we need to do, I'd love to do that. You've really helped me and my family a lot.
Excellent.
Perfect.
Cindy. Happy to.
Okay. Well, John, on behalf of Cindy and I and our audience, we thank you very much for joining us this morning, and we appreciate your thoughts and insight. And we will definitely have you come back on here and as for a longer segment. And I know you've got to go. Go ahead, I'll wrap things up here.
Yep. Ted, Cindy, thank you very much for the opportunity. It was a pleasure, and I'll be happy to come back.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. All right. Have a great day when you guys. All right, that was our very special guest, Cindy. Like I said, I know you have to go, so you go ahead, and I'll wrap up the closing of the show.
Thanks, Ted.
So have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. I want to thank our special guest today, Brianna Elliott, the winner of the Fossil Kia Championship here on the tour. Great job, Brianna, and enjoy the win and enjoy the celebration of your family back in Australia. And, of course, enjoy that new Kia Optima, as I'm sure you will. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to having you back as well. And also a very special guest, Don Stabler, co-founder and co-owner of Golf Psych. Go to golfpsych.com. As he said, you can learn more information there if you're a student or if you're somebody in the golf profession and you want to learn how to handle things a little bit better out in the golf course. John and of course, his wife, Dr. Deborah Graham, have some information there on the website. So make sure you go and visit that at golfpsych.com. On behalf of Cindy Miller and I want to thank, obviously, in addition to our special guests, all listeners from around the world for tuning into the broadcast each and every week. And we look forward to getting some more great guests on the show, some players and those in the golf industry. And we appreciate your support. Make sure you go to blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf. If you've missed today's broadcast or didn't get all of it, you want to go back and revisit, you can go into the on-demand section. Not only catch today's program, which is now recorded, but also any of the earlier recorded programs, you can go back in there and listen to them at your leisure. We strongly suggest that you do so. I think you'll get some great tips and get to hear some great conversation from a lot of top-notch players that have been on the program. So, again, on behalf of Cindy Miller and I, have a great week. We will see you back here at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Women of God bless everybody and have a great week.